know, today, Wednesday, the 13th of September. Thank you for being here. It's such an early scale. Okay, so now we are today, we're very lucky to welcome among us some great characters who have defined and have dedicated their careers to the open standards in general. And today we are going to discuss the merits of open document format. Each of them will shortly introduce himself. Let me just maybe quote the names. To my right, Mr. Eduardo Gutentag, chairman of the board of directors of the OASIS Consortium, employee of Sun Microsystems, long-time employee of Sun Microsystems, distinguished engineer. Mr. Bob Suter, from IBM, director of open standards, is that correct?
Yeah.
Vice president, open standards.
Bob Weir,
distinguished engineer, somebody who is, and I can witness that every day, on the mailing list of the open documents technical committees, somebody who is dedicating his time and devoting his efforts towards making open document for what it is today and what it will be in the future. My name is Charles Schulz. I'm the lead of the Native Land Confederation of OpenOffice.org and a partner at the Ars Technica Consulting Group. Shall we maybe start by introducing ourselves a bit more? Eduardo?
Thank you, Charles. Well, there's not much. There's not much to add other than one, I'm not a distinguished engineer, I'm a technology director, whatever that means. And I'm also in the advisory board of W3C, in the board of ID Alliance, and I spend my days doing nothing but talking over the phone and sending emails to people. And I've been doing that for way too many years.
Bob Suter, I've been IBM a heck of a long time, the last 10 years, in and around the standards area, both the pure standard side, then the product, and now standards and open source. I lead internally, really with several other people, this project, this play, if you will, we're doing around open document. I'm responsible for a lot of our internal coordination and management of our standards and open source projects. One of the things I would like to discuss today, as things come out, is really how is open document format symbolic of a major change going on in the industry. We can talk all we want about it in XML and compare it to everything else. But there's a much bigger movement going on around the world that is a signifying. One of the reasons why we came all the way to France to discuss it.
And thank you, we appreciate that, really.
Hi, I'm Rob Weir. I joined Lotus Development Corporation right out of college many years ago, where I worked on freelance graphics, 123, word processor. I ended up having a focus on file formats back then, and over the years I've advanced to the point where I can do exactly the same thing in XML. Of course, that's just a little bit of a joke, and I hope through this session this morning and through the sessions this afternoon you hear about how OpenDocument is not just a file format in XML. It's opening up a much broader world, and hopefully we'll demonstrate that to you.
Yeah, sure.
Just one word before we start. Two people approached me last night and said, so are there going to be fireworks tomorrow morning? And my answer was no, I don't think there will be fireworks. So those who are here just to see Bob and myself argue, vigorously, or something like that, is time to leave. We're not going to do that, I don't think so.
Anyway, we will not forget to discuss the details of the IBM Sun merger on this panel. Anyway.
That's a joke.
Yes, that's a joke. No, nobody's from Wall Street.
Nope.
It's really with Google.
So what I'm going to do very shortly is to ask each of you to summarize in a few words to you why and how the Open Document format is important to you in a few words, so that people can get, you know, just like a grasp of what you're thinking on that. Eduardo?
Okay, thank you. Some years ago, about 5 years ago, I was in a conference and I started my talk with a slide that said, XML is useless. Gasp from the audience. And my second slide said, unless there is a schema behind it. And I could say at this point that, just to show up and wake you up, that OpenOffice is useless unless there is ODF behind it. For me, the importance is the conjunction of an open source project with an open standard behind it. That is the essence of why ODF is important, because it permits the existence of open source projects and others that can interoperate based on the standard. That's all for now.
First thing that comes to mind is, it's about time. I mean, how long have we been dealing with word processors and text processing and .NET and Unix, and well before that? For us in 2006, to even think that suddenly we're so brilliant that we can figure out how to have a common document format is well after the date we should have come. Now, of course, there are reasons why this didn't happen. I mean, basically the last 15 years of computing. People used to deal with let me say, ASCII file formats all the time for text processing. People used to filter them constantly, do marvelous things as we moved into the binary era. Things slowly started getting locked down. In fact, both from a software perspective, but from a legal perspective as well. So I see ODF, yes, very much technically as a good thing, and it's evolving. But I just love it because it's shaping up the industry. It's a real hook, and we've been trying to get this point about open standards made for several years now in different ways. And you can't change the world overnight on this, but you got to start making this essentially obvious to people, you know, that on this firm foundation of open standards, we can build really cool stuff. We'll talk a lot about that this morning, I hope, as well. And this has caught people's imagination. You know, as much as you might want to say, you know, I don't pick some X forms, it's the most exciting thing in the universe. You know, let's go to the consumers and tell them about X codes. Now they shrug their shoulders, like, I don't care. Right? But everybody has dealt with these documents. Everybody has had compatibility problems. Everybody's had a crash somewhere along the way. One of my early fears when I got married was my wife just did a whole paper, she was in graduate school, and whatever the word processor was, it just died, crashed. So this whole, you know, notion of information and preservation of information, using a different application that would have worked better, right, having the choice would have been a very good thing. So to start this, therefore, I say ODF is great because it's making people fundamentally rethink their information, the importance of their information, and then technically what you can do with it.
Yeah, look at the knowledge worker, you know, the people who are sitting down creating these documents. We're creating documents that encompass our experience, our wisdom, our observations, the knowledge of the corporation, and we put them in documents. And for the past 20 years or so, these have been documents that sit on a file server and are essentially opaque. You really can't see inside them unless you're in the, you know, application that originally created them or you print them out. And I see a lot of value in things coming forward, you know, things with text analytics and stuff. You have a transparent format that everyone can look into, have application and platform neutral. And I see just all that wisdom being accumulated in these documents and interesting things being able to happen. I don't think we know right now what those are, but it'll probably be, you know, when we think of a search engine 5-10 years from now, it'll probably be based on the ability and the things that you can do from being able to see inside these documents rather than just treat them as a blob. I think that's what is exciting to me about ODF.
I'll be making just like my small Microsoft voice. Should we even be discussing a file format? Shouldn't Bell be focused on the feature sets?
Feature sets are application dependent.
Sure.
And so, yes, if you want to talk about an application, we can talk about an application. But ODF is not an application. ODF is something that goes way behind the application. In many cases, I talk a lot about IPR issues, intellectual property rights issues, and one of the metaphors I use is based on electricity. And you have an engine that is the application, and you have the plug, which is the interface. And so the question is, when you talk about patents, would you rather have the patent on the application or on the interface? And if you have a patent on the interface, sadly, you dominate the world. If you have a patent on the application, then you don't dominate the world. In this particular case, if we were to transport that metaphor to what we're talking about, this is ODF. This is the application. Once you have this in your hands, you can use whatever application you want on it, and you have the interoperability in your hands.
As far as feature sets, I think for a lot of these applications, we kind of hit the feature sets that most people wanted about 15 years ago. It's been well understood for a very long time. One of the big stories from 2005 was the state of Massachusetts, right, in the U.S., and Peter Quinn. You follow the story at all, but that means something to you. A very aggressive state CIO in the U.S. Now, in the U.S., obviously, compared to Europe, the U.S. is not very old. So when we say 200 years, it's like ancient. You imagine temples, marble. That's for the U.S. But they were very concerned. I mean, Massachusetts was one of the original colonies, right? They were very concerned about their information. And they very much said, we need to make sure our information is usable 200 years from now. Right? And you can say, well, people hack whatever formats we've got in 200 years. But it really went beyond that. It slowly became a story by last August and this was a word I had never heard before concerning standards of sovereignty. Right? So government actually coming up and saying, this is a question of who has sovereignty over our information. Do we have to ever ask a vendor permission to do anything with our data? And that may sound strange and ridiculous, but that was exactly the situation they were in at the beginning of 2005. There were licenses from, apparently not to be named, that in fact said, this is what you can do with your information if you create it in our application. To which people sort of, when they realized this, they said, well, but the heck with you, extend that. And so governments from the beginning of 2005 to the end of 2005 suddenly had this feeling saying, we're actually in control. And they said, we want the ability to choose any application. And it's not just any application today. It's just as you're working at openoffice.org, and it has a certain number of feature sets today. Frankly, I hope it's going to be a lot better in 5 or 10 years, right? It's that application that we have to start worrying about today, and the information that we create, or 20 years, or something completely different. In fact, I think in a decade, the so-called office suite market will be radically different. It still exists. Information better be reusable.
Yeah, I guess going back to the original question, I guess I object to the kind of the equation that says feature set is equal to power for the user. when I look at functionality of modern word processors, I see them having a lot more than the average user touches, and I'd almost say the power of the application of the user is not what it allows the user to do, but what it allows the user to forget. You could have a word processor that allowed you to choose the exact kerning of the font. Is that a good thing? Maybe for some users, but the average user doesn't want to worry about that. And I actually see users kind of moving back. I mean, you look at wikis today. I mean, what has less control over the formatting than a wiki? People seem to prefer using a wiki for collaboration, for the things it can bring, rather than sending around a, you know, a giant document in a binary format and working with that. So it's going to be some sort of convergence that says, let's take the functionality that the users need, put them in an open format, and be able to do that real-time collaborative editing, the type of stuff we do with a wiki, maybe with a little bit more control, but a lot more power. Because you're taking care of the things, the application is taking care of the things that the user doesn't want to worry about, so they can concentrate on what they should be concentrating on, which is the knowledge, the wisdom, the stuff that they're adding to the document, not on font kerning.
Okay. Yeah, my first question actually was not about the feature sets. I was trying to make a smart transition, but you know, if I tell you open standards and state of the art, I've been talking to a lot of people about open document format myself. I could see several things. First of all, people asking me that question about the feature sets. That was the first one. And the second one being, yes, but how open documents and, in general, open standards, how can you call that the state of the art in Office file format? And that's really just the question I'd like to ask. Why and how open document format is the state of the art for state of the art for documents?
I think one of the nice things or the cool things about ODF that makes it state-of-the-art is its reuse of existing standards. I mean, what's the state-of-the-art in forms? Is it XForms? What's the state-of-the-art in text formatting? Is it XSLFO? And we've taken standards like that and brought it together and found the best debris from other standards bodies like the W3C and put it together in a document format. And I think the state-of-the-art is saying, how can you design a format so it uses the existing wisdom, the existing standards in a way that allows you to use the existing tools. You know, if you use SVG for vector graphics, then you have a set of open source programs that you can just use to display that SVG. If you use MathML, there's a bunch of programs that you can use that can both create and consume MathML. So it's kind of looking at a file format as not just being a monolithic entity, but being, you know, part of an ecosystem of cooperating and coordinating standards. And I think that's a different perspective that ODF is bringing.
Through the years, these formats and document formats and schemas have almost become religious issues for a lot of people. So as you were talking about the state of the art, it's like, well, to whom, right? Because there are people who would pick anything, and they would just say it's the lousiest thing in the world because that's not what they do. Right? First of all, it's evolving. I mean, let's remember that, too. It's not a done project. There was certainly a challenge posed to the ODF community last year about accessibility, and there'll be a talk in this track later today about that. And you know, it caused a little heartburn for a while as we were dealing with it, in particular in Massachusetts. But it was a terrific challenge to the open community to say, here's something, you know, it's not quite right. In fact, it's not quite up to what some other people can do. So what do you do? You just spend a little time in Meet Minimum. Instead, what happened was the community took up the challenge, and through what will be two or three phases, the first phase, which is this fall, will certainly bring it up to so-called state of the art here, accessibility, and then actually go beyond that to offer some value, some new innovative features for people who need these accessible features. Right? And so I would say, aside from any of the technical content in it, what makes the state of the art is the engagement, the very active engagement of the community to improve this in a very systematic way. OASIS responded incredibly here. They brought in people, they waived membership fees for experts in accessibility to drive this work. So it's the process, I would say, both going way back from Sun when you, you know, again, thank you. originally made your contribution of what became ODF, and the ongoing work and the future work that I think is what establishes it as state of the art.
Thank you. Well, yes, it's exactly what Rob said. It's state of the art because it evolves. State of the art means whatever is needed and required today, meaning today and tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. And it's because it is an open standard where everybody can participate and everybody can say, this is what we need and this is what we want to do. It is because of that that it can maintain being state of the art. It can continue being state of the art. If it's state of the art today, and it gets petrified and fossilized, then certainly tomorrow is not state of the art anymore. By being an open process where everybody can participate and everybody can contribute, then we can remain assured that it will be also state of the art tomorrow.
Just to make that quick piece of information, yes, the open document format process and the open document format specification itself is, of course, evolving. Thanks to the open documents format technical committee inside the OASIS, we're now working on the specification 1.1. So it is evolving, and it is evolving every day. So it's very important to say this. This is not a done deal in any way. So my next question would be, you know, who should be adopting open document format? I know what your answer would be is everybody, but who specifically and for what usage it order?
Actually, from the point of view of the user, nobody, because it should be completely invisible to the user what they're using. The user should be using OpenOffice, they should be using Windows 1-3, whatever it is. The same way as, you know, why would they have to know what is behind it? There's absolutely no reason. There's absolutely no reason why the user should know whether a particular page in the web is HTML or XHTML or whatever. No reason whatsoever. Those who should be using ODF would be the application makers, the builders of the applications that the users use, and mostly governmental institutions should be concerned about using the open standard. But that's about it. I mean, users should not worry about it.
So no one should. My take on it is the following. Two main groups that I think we really need to focus on. And it is everybody, but two really interesting groups. So the first group, I think, are those in education, kids, high school kids. All right, they get this stuff. They don't come in with the preconceptions of monolithic software companies controlling markets. All right, they have grown up through Napster. They've grown up through a completely different world. They were so-called, the expression, born on the web. Right? They used to talk about software companies, but these kids are literally born on the web. Right? They don't know anything different. The more we can get them just thinking in this way of ODF and open technologies, the more when they are running the businesses in 10 or 20 or 30 years, that's the way the world will be then. I told this story last year on my blog, so I'm sorry if you've heard this, but I live in a small town in upstate New York. You know, very small. It's a college town, but quite small. And I was in Walmart. And I heard this teenage girl talking to her mother. And I couldn't quite figure out because it was just a strange conversation. Because she and I ran in to get a little paint or something, you know, something from the house. What it turned out she was talking about was open office. She was describing to her mother, and she kind of talked about open office, and she was talking about this. She actually mentioned, you know, sort of file format. She said, yeah, it's free. You go, you download it, it's great, and all my friends are using it. I said, you know, the world's starting to change here. You know, if I in my little town here and start overhearing this, it threw me off completely for the rest of the day. The other group is governments, okay, public sector, the other parts of public sector. Reason is because governments have so much power in procurement. Governments also have responsibility to their citizens to not lock them into proprietary applications, proprietary technology. what is now happening, in fact, with the open document format, even though we've made a lot of overt, we've given a lot of overt attention to a lot of these governments, they're starting to flip by themselves. Okay. So we were told, for example, Singapore would be very tough. No, they have their own way of thinking about things. Then we read in the paper that the Department of Defense in Singapore has switched to ODF. The Advanced Science Agency in the Philippines has switched to ODF. I never went to talk to them. Maybe someone, maybe you want to talk to them. And I don't feel like I have to talk to everybody, but nevertheless, we're starting to see these people build on the previous experiences. And once we get enough of this common base in public sector, we'll see this massive swing.
So who should use ODF? I was kind of chuckling as you were describing the initial story. I gave my mother OpenOffice as well. She said she wanted to learn how to use a spreadsheet, and I could think of no better way. So I think first thing is everyone's mother should be using ODF. Maybe that could be a campaign on Mother's Day.
Bob, my mom can't stand computers. I don't know what to do about her reading or magic.
But
I gave it to my father, and yeah, he loves
it. Can you give her a link to Writely, and then she can send
it? I'll do that.
Another group that I think would be excellent, and they're already doing excellent work here with ODF, is application developers. You know, people are doing things that are not, you know, a full spreadsheet or a full word processor with a million lines of C++ code, but are doing things with a Python or a Ruby script, things that are either creating documents, you know, through computation, analyzing documents, consuming documents. You know, I'd like to see ODF become the preferred way of doing document-based programming. And I think we have some work to do there in terms of, you know, getting toolkits together. There's, you know, little projects happening here and there on SourceForge and other places to do this, but it'd be nice to see a more unified effort towards an application development environment for reading and writing ODF documents. I think then application developers would be the place for it.
Eduardo, you wanted to say something?
In fact, I just want to follow up on that last point. We're trying to, in fact, encourage a very open discussion in the community around what software there should be that supports ODF. And the short answer is a lot. Okay. Not just OpenOffice, not just our stuff, not just the things on SourceForge. A lot. Right? How can we get all this great stuff together? How can we build the toolkits? Now, I want somebody to be able to go say, you know, hey, I just heard about this ODF thing. I'd love to tie it in with my application. And by that evening, by looking around the web, finding some open source code, they can do it. And they don't need 100 megabytes worth of open source code to do this, right? They need something small. They can read it in, they can emit it, or something else. We need to get to that point where it is just such a common thing, and there's such good code factored in such a nice way that people can build lots of different types of applications. So I think you're going to be hearing more about this idea. But literally, it's just we're trying to generate discussion about this in the industry, because as we see these pockets of application developers starting to use this, we want to make it much simpler to do.
If we're going to go into that nickel part of the conversation, I was telling Rob last night about my daughter. We were talking about our daughters, they're the same age, and I was telling Rob that my daughter, who's 16, she's been using OpenOffice for the past 3 years, and it was for her a kind of mortifying experience because she was the only one in her class who used it. This year, by contrast, she's very proud of using OpenOffice because it's open source. And now she knows what open source is, and she knows what it means and all that, but she actually couldn't care less whether it's ODF or something else, to tell you the truth. For her at this point, and for all these teenagers who are coming into the world, the point is that it's open source. For us, the fact that it's ODF is extremely important. For them, I'm not sure. Sorry, contrary.
Well, my daughter knows I do it, so she wants to. That's one.
So the thing I wanted to basically say, isn't Windows cool? Just look at that. So, you know, you were talking about people you know, willing to adopt open documents and knowing about open documents. And, you know, I think I'm not the only one, actually. The OASIS and its members do think that it's very, very important for a real community of users, of fans, of potential developers, potential people who would like to bring ODF inside their application. Well, we thought it was very important that such a, you know, a meeting place could be actually designed. And this is what the OASIS adoption, OASIS Open Document Format Adoption Committee has been working on for the several past weeks. Let me show you the new website for the Open Document Format community, and I would like you to applaud that. This is the opendocuments.xml.org. On this page, you can see the new Open Documents logo and also that forced upgrade from Microsoft Windows, which is such a great piece of art. So this website is really a community website. It has been thought and designed as a very easy and very usable website. You have, for instance, a page for the products. So there are, as you know, it's really something that we want to provide information to the broader community. So the point is that, for instance, you have information about IBM Workplace, Key Office, Pull Open Document Connector, Store Office, things like that. But you have also, you know, you have forums, you have discussion forums, you have testimonials, you will soon have case studies, resources, for instance. You know, you got the white papers, case studies, books. You got many, many, many things. You even have blogs. I should mention that the login, oh my god, just look at that, I'm sorry. I should mention something that is very important. You do not need to be a member of the OASIS Consortium, or you do not need to be a member of a company working for being a member of the OASIS Consortium to register and use this website. Everybody, absolutely everybody, can come up and register and post content and come up with stories and come up with blogs. This is, we really believe, you know, I'm not the first one to say that. Many people say that, you know, much better than I will say it. But, you know, the internet and the web is a conversation. And we believe that, you know, opendocument.xml.org should be a conversation. We really believe there should be a conversation between ODF and about ODF and something that should be taking place between everybody concerned. Yeah, yet again. I'm sorry. Yeah, so actually, you are absolutely encouraged to participate and join this effort. You know, we can post up news, and we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from everybody who has a good story on Open Document Format, who has an idea about Open Document Format. So this is it. So let's maybe just regain our seats. The next question we had in mind was maybe, and this could be like, you know, not something that could be absolutely technical, but we want to talk about, are there any ways to improve open document formats, for instance, by supporting other open standards such as the Open Formula?
Yeah, I mean, there are ways of improving open document, and we're doing those. We have several, right now, three subcommittees within the ODFTC, one dealing with accessibility. They had an initial set of deliverables, and we'll hear a lot more of that from this afternoon. But they're continuing to do their work to make this, you know, bring more cutting-edge accessibility features to file formats that have not been seen anywhere yet. We also have a formula subcommittee, which is taking an existing specification called Open Formula for spreadsheet formulas and functions, and we're currently standardizing that within OASIS as a subcommittee, and then eventually vote on it from the TC's perspective. We have a subcommittee looking at metadata,
again, what sort of metadata, both bibliographic metadata at the document level, but also things like semantic tagging and stuff within the document. And we're looking at evaluating existing standards like RDF XML and things like that. So there's definitely ways of improving and advancing what ODF can do. And in OASIS, it's very easy for us to create a subcommittee to do that. Thank you. That important, but it really needs it. Yes,
feels underrepresented. It was just a cry for attention.
Right. yes. One of the great characteristics of the ODF, the Open Document Format for Office Applications PC, is that the charter itself calls for continuous improvement. Part of the charter is to look at other things and try to bring them in, make sure that there is harmonization between ODF and other formats. Of course, you know, harmonization with other formats is it's a game that two partners must play. It's not something that the PC by itself can do. So we'll see where that goes. But I would like to clarify something that I've been trying to say all the time and I'm not succeeding at it, and it's about the role of ODF. My dream is that in 5 years, there will be no conferences on ODF. Just as today, there are no conferences on ASCII. Okay? And in a couple of years, conferences on XML will disappear because XML is everywhere, and there is no need to have conferences exhorting the virtues of XML. I would like.
How about John?
Yes, too. Should be everywhere. Yeah. The goal should be to reach the point where it is so obvious that ODF is behind all these applications that we don't need this kind of panels about ODF. There's just no need.
One of the ways I think we're beginning to see it get attention, actually, you reminded me when you were talking about the formula. There's been a lot of FUD tossed up about ODF. Some of it amazingly ridiculous. Lasts about 5 minutes and that goes away. Rob tells the story of his blog, which I really recommend if you're interested in ODF, the technical side of it in general. But go and read. It's just a fascinating story. Investigative reporter, technologist there. But about how the work being done there on the formula subcommittee, actually finally drove, if you will, the competition to start doing something themselves. After saying, well, don't use that over there because they don't have a documented formula format. We don't either. Suddenly they then were forced into doing it. So being state of the art, it is now triggering other groups. I think, aside from the very high and lofty issues, just the notion, as Rob said, about reuse of existing specifications, ODF does an excellent job there. And we need that. We need to see them layered one on top of the other. The competition does an absolutely horrible, terrible job of doing it. I mean, embarrassingly bad job of reusing real standards there. So what ODF is doing, as part of the bigger picture, is starting to set, if you will, the standard for reuse of other things being developed in the W3C, in OASIS. If it's good, if other people are using it, it can get incorporated.
Interesting.
I agree 100%.
That was a statement. That was a statement.
Read my blog, 100%.
Yeah. So the next question is kind of a more special question. Do you think open document format, do you think it is more of a, more just an office file format? My point is that we may want to see, you know, we may want to see open nonconformance in embedded in places and applications that are absolutely different from the Office file format or from any kind of text editors. We may want to see them. We may want to see open nonconformance somewhere on the net. We may want to see open nonconformance on connected devices. What do you think about, you know, what could be done about this?
Well, I think it's already happening, in a way. I mean, certainly, perhaps it's not happening in terms of existing applications, but it's happening in people's minds. And so everybody is thinking of how to use OVM in this application or that context. And it's not just for writing documents and more. Okay? So I think that we will see that happening very, very soon. And you know, certainly in the web, in terms of exchanges and downloads and that kind of thing, as far as I'm concerned, it's done.
Yeah, it's hard to predict. I mean, I'm thinking if you go back decades and look at SGML, who would have thought that one day we would have XML and we'd be using it for essentially remote procedure calls with web services and stuff? Who would have thought that something that was originally something for specifying documents could be used programmatically that way? I think a few years ago they had kind of a joke April Fool's Day on XML to route electricity or IP over XML or some ridiculous thing like that. I don't think it'll go that far, but we're already seeing around the edges, you know, a redefinition of what applications mean. You see, you know, Dan Bricklin's work with his wiki calc. We're taking aspects of a spreadsheet and a wiki together to make something that's neither a wiki nor a spreadsheet, combining aspects of each one. And I think naturally, to the extent ODF is using a bunch of standards and kind of coordinating them together to create a document format, it's a natural fit to extend to other application classes like that. So I don't think I can predict what will happen, but I'm pretty sure ODF will be a big part of it.
One of the things that I think is going to be necessary to keep that dream, you know, continuing is it has to stay relatively small, right? It has to stay well architected, well factored as a standard. We have heard of some device manufacturers now looking at supporting ODF on the devices. So the ODF spec today, at least, is like 760 some pages there. The competition, which you don't know what you're talking about, is around 4,000 pages, and they say they're about two-thirds done. Oh, cool, I have my little device. I want to implement a 6,000-page spec to read paragraphs. You know, which is going to come first? So I think actually for that reason, just that it's relatively small and handles most of the primary features, will continue to do that. Part of the other reasons, and I alluded to this before, is just that the way people create and use information has fundamentally changed. I do not think ODF is in any way going to replace HTML or XHTML, right? It's not going to replace PDF for that matter either. But it's a different type of document structure to it. It can certainly have a place for a lot of people. I'm never a good example because I like to play with lots of different applications. I play with newer things like this. But frankly, I don't use a word processor very much these days. Right, so what do I do?
You're using Emacs? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Oh, yeah, I'm a VI.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. More religion. So what do? I mean, like all of you, I write a lot. Right. I actually use programming editing. Some parts of my life, and I do a lot of blogging and stuff like this. I use a word processor maybe once a week, right? And that is starting to shift. And you know, I talked about the younger generation. What do they type most of? Instant messages, right? Yeah. So that's what I was saying about this market changing. You know, the economics of the market is changing. If you fundamentally have far, far fewer people who are using Office Suites year by year by year, well, to the degree that they are using it, and there's a free one and a good one, well, you guys win, right, pretty much. And who loses? Well, the people who want to charge hundreds of dollars a year for this thing that people hardly ever use, right? So my prediction is that this pure Office Suite market as an economic entity is going to collapse within the next decade, that there simply will not be enough revenue
in the market left for pure office suites to allow the $1 billion investment for these major updates. So we're simply going to have to look at other types of software. And that's why I think ODF will drive a lot of this innovation in this space. Plug for another talk, Doug Heinzman, at the very end of the day in this ODF track, will be talking about what some IBM researchers are thinking about this. So if you just like the perspective from some of our guys about where this might go, he'll be talking about this. And I think he has some demos as well.
I don't know if you remember of when XML came out a few years ago, and when it was obvious that it came onto the world with an explosion of PR. And one very interesting article that happened that week was entitled XML, The Revenge of the 40-somethings, because all the people involved in XML at that point was in their 40s. My prediction is that ODF will be labeled the triumph of the 20-somethings.
Thank you, Warren.
You're not 20.
I'm in my 20s.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well,
you're very mature.
I don't know, should I take this?
Yeah. No. Really, I think, you know, it is the youngest generation, those who are in their teens today, who, as Ron said, will be using ODF in their daily lives, and as I say, without even knowing that it's ODF.
Sorry.
On the future of ODF, Open Document Format, my next question will be about the future of the specification itself. Could we just actually, I assume once you have a, you know, talk about something that has been widely debated and discussed in the OASIS ODF adoption TC, it is something that Intel, was one of our previous sponsors this year, has been working on. It is, and if there is somebody from Intel in the room, that, you know, I may not have all information, but so feel free to join the debate. Intel has been, forget about it. Intel has been working on a wiki that is basically, it can work on an online and offline mode. On the online mode, it is just an absolutely normal wiki. In fact, I don't know if it's more online or video wiki. I mean, it's just really, you know, the regular wiki. But they've been changing it so that when Intel employees are working on this wiki, just like a kind of a CMS, you know, corporate CMS, the wiki saves the contents, the edited contents in ODF. And then the ODF content is both archived, stored and archived in databases, somewhere Intel, and then refactored, retransformed into HTML. So that it can, you know, basically, yeah, being, yeah, repurposed into the wiki content. And they're really adamant of this. You know, it's just something I've been doing internally, and it seems to be something that works great. So I'm not in this room, obviously, but he's been working on this. And this is one of the examples of what you can do, basically, with ODF and how you can have, you know, a multi-context and multi-purpose usage of open document format. That was interesting to mention it. Now, yeah, my question is about the future of open document format. In terms of, you know, what each one of you would like to see happening for open document format in terms of, features, standard support, technology, how would you like that to chat? Maybe Eduardo first, or Bob?
I'll give you an interesting technical answer. I hadn't heard the thing that Intel was doing. That sounds very interesting. We're looking at some things like that in the metadata subcommittee. We're currently in the process of coming up with use cases and requirements for adding additional metadata support to ODF 1.2. And some of the scenarios we look at are things we call real-time collaborative editing, you know, synchronizing documents, And when you talk about kind of the offline wiki use, the immediate thing is you have a solution for something that that will need to do, and that is, what if you are doing offline editing of the wiki, I'm doing offline editing of the wiki, and then we have to merge those changes in together and we both synchronize. I think part of it is, you know, we need to acknowledge that with ODF, a document is not just a single monolithic large XML file. It's made up of several XML files representing styles and content. And using, you know, existing technologies like XPath and XLink, you could imagine a single logical document being constituted of multiple parts in different locations. You could have part of the XML document, I could have a separate XML document, that to get together give the full document. And it could be things like, here's the main document, a contract, suppose that two attorneys are negotiating, is the main one, and then you have your annotations and additions to it that you only share with your client. I have my annotations and comments that I only share with my client, but they get synchronized through XPath and XLink, so we know kind of, you know, what parts are being annotated by, you know, the two respective attorneys. And I think that's kind of where it leads to, is kind of a broader definition of what is a document. It's not necessarily just a single file. It could be multiple parts that multiple people own.
It occurred to me a month or two ago that one of the things that this is enabling is a lot of the technology that Ted Nelson was talking about 20 years ago or more.
Right.
So that is, before the web, people actually thought about hypertext. Most people think Wink started somewhere around 1992 or something. But in fact, it's much older than that. And so Ted Nelson had this very elaborate view, maybe too elaborate view, of this whole notion of text being stored in different places and links and preserved. Slowly, we're starting to go back and re-examine these older ideas and discovering, like with AJAX, that we now have built the standards that we can fit together to do cool new things. Right? So I refer to it in a somewhat overblown way, I admit, with a capital R, that ODF and these other standards are bringing on this renaissance, right, in the sense of rediscovery of old ideas, but with new tools and new ways of thinking and putting them together. So,
if only Ted Nelson had had the infrastructure provided by open source and open standards, who knows where the world would be today. He was an incredible genius. Going back to your question, I think that another way of looking at it from a different angle is what is actually the interaction between ODF and OpenOffice individually? Yeah, I mean, is ODF good or bad for OpenOffice? And I think we have to confront that question because it exists, and I know it exists.
Can
you just
get out that here?
No,
the answer.
No, I think it's a relevant question. We are in an open office or conference.
But it's what we're basically saying here, just the same conundrum that the documents and the application. We may want to put the name OpenOffice.org because it is supposed to be the reference, the de facto reference implementation of open document format. But yeah, it is a value valuable question.
And actually, my view of that is a very optimistic one. Because I think that the adoption of ODF by the world will actually push the adoption of, among others, OpenOffice. And the adoption rate will increase. And it will also drive the development of OpenOffice into areas that, you know, it's not touching today, but will touch tomorrow. And
okay. Here's another application we hope it drives the adoption.
Yeah, sure.
And that is Lotus Notes, right, which we like a lot. Okay.
We
do. Revenue is good. You know, one of the things we announced in the last few months was that the next version, the so-called Hanover release for Lotus Notes, due in the middle of next year, will support GASP, right? ODF will have the little word processor, little presentation, little spreadsheet software. We don't have to go there too much, but and it's, you know, because of its ODF support,
from the perspective of our existing customers, it means that people who upgrade, and it's 125 million seats, right, people upgrade will, whether they use it or not, they will not use it, but will have potentially ODF support there. And the view of it is, you know, I don't think anyone in their right mind is going to buy this product just to do a little word processing. Right? Lotus Notes has other characteristics, does a lot of things, right? But in the way of people doing, you know, their business processes, their workflow, they may have to edit a document, create a spreadsheet, whatever, that's why it's important. And the notion that people will be sharing this. Like everything else, it can be synchronized offline with online types of things. So a lot of the things you mentioned in terms of synchronization work on the devices, we as an industry know how to do these things. I mean, think of Writely, right, and the many other, in fact, of these work, these web-based word processors. This notion of offline synchronization is going to be very, very important. I've got to be able to work on a document when I'm on a train or a plane or something. You know, if I have to wait till I'm on the web, forget it. How's that going to happen? What's going to be the offline part of that that does that? So you guys, for example, could be. Right? Is it us? Could be both.
Talking with my son had firmly in place. We've been saying for many, many, many years, almost since the beginning of the company, that the goal is to collaborate on standards and compete on implementation. And this is exactly what we're doing at this moment.
And it drives it all forward because the different types of investments. Right? If you look at how ODF has become successful, it's a lot of people contributing different types of things. Certainly there have been the technical contributors, but there are people who have been contributing and talking to people, going to schools. So it's very much been this group effort. We haven't mentioned it yet. I know you mentioned the adoption. I wanted to mention the ODF Alliance just as well, which is very much focused. In case you're not familiar with it, I refer to Massachusetts, 2005 ODF in Massachusetts. We learned a lot of lessons, good lessons, and things we should have done better, things other people should have done better. So in March of this year, we started what was called the Open Document Format Alliance, specifically to encourage the adoption of ODF in the public sector, governments around the world. And clearly, that could mean a lot, and I believe has, for OpenOffice and StarOffice and things like this as well. We hope to start it with about 10 organizations and individuals. Anything less than that, we thought, would be seen as simply the usual suspects who line up against Microsoft. Right? We started with 36. It wasn't that hard to find. 5 weeks later, there were 138. 2 months later, we had 240. Google announced by the end that they were going to join after they did some very nice work on the intellectual property about this. 1 week after that, 40 additional members had joined. So it's now right up around 300 people around the world. It's over, yeah, somewhere around 300. You lose track after it's big. But all these people, you know, some of them are corporations, a lot of them are individuals, some of them are departments in universities, some of them are agencies and governments, Bristol City Council, okay, are all coming together. And it just, you know, what this thing is that we think of as ODF has lots of contributions that aren't just technical, aren't just XML. And that's why it's becoming a movement, actually much more than just a standard.
The last question, and then we'll pass on to questions from the audience. It's one of, you know, I'm the kind of a kid in serving, you know, I love to ask Dell's questions. So, as you all know, Open Document Format is an open standard, but it's an actual, the UI standard, in the sense that it is an ISO standard, ISO 26300. So the question is, there are other initiatives, other Office 5 formats that are, well, in the process of being, of being totally defined, at least in the first stable version. And the vendor behind this format has announced its commitment to bring this format to the ISO as well. Now, let me tell you a story about the standards in Europe. And so you had
you know, three different standards, three different rail standards. And then what happened is that, well, those standards were kind of, they were not even standards, actually. The sizes and the metrics were unified inside each country, but each country, until the end of the World War II, kept its own national standard, so that in case of an invasion, the trains of the enemy could not get very easily into the country. So now there is an ongoing a standardization process that basically unifying the sizes and the rail technology. Now let me ask you this. We're talking about open document as a standard. But what happens if we have another ISO standard? What will be same?
Well, actually the same story happened in the United States. There were many railroad companies, each one with their own railroad gauges. And that was, at some point, J.P. Morgan started buying all the railroad companies, sometimes nicely, sometimes not so nicely. He was not a very, he was a typical capitalist of the, and he solved the problem by establishing a monopoly. He had a monopoly over the railroad, so he decided what the gauge was going to be, and that's it. Okay, no national non-national government standard for it. He just did it by monopoly. And that, in many cases, is repeated in our days through monopolies, which basically, weighed heavily on the market to the point where the market is not free market anymore. The phenomenon presented by UDF is that it establishes balance in the market, hopefully a balance strong enough so that the standard is set not by the fact of monopoly, but by I wouldn't say governmental intervention either, but by consensus among the users and the consumers. If there's going to be another standard, well, you know, there are two electrical standards, 110 and 220, and they currently coexist very nicely through through little apparatuses that you connect to your computer, for instance, or in many cases, you don't even have to do anything because it just does it automatically. Knows what to, how to react to 110 volts and how to react to 220 volts. And you don't have to worry whether the application that you buy is going to explode because you put it in the wrong plug. Not anymore.
Let me, and I'm sorry if this sounds too philosophical, but is one standard not enough? And if there are two standards, can we still call them standards? You know, that's about efficiency, isn't it?
Well, it will depend. It is very hard to predict what the market will do. The only thing I can say is, and I know that you're going to laugh hearing this coming from my lips, but Microsoft is a very intelligent company. There is no doubt about it. And if they have to adopt ODM, they will. Whether they will do it or not, whether they will have to or not, it's impossible to know. But they do some things that are sometimes extremely surprising. Like, for instance, yesterday they issued a non-essential covenant for their web services specifications. Which, you know, in a way, it's a very surprising move. On the other hand, it just shows how pragmatic they are.
So the first thing is we're actually a long, long way from there being a second ISO standard, if there will be one. Estimates are probably, put it, if it were to happen at the soonest possible time, probably about 16 months from now. And there's a lot that will happen in those 16 months, one way or the other. we're seeing some interesting positioning already on some of these sorts of things. One of the things about OEF is it is an open standard. Anybody can implement it. So for whatever group, whether you like it or not, implement it or not, that's fine. But I think it's going to be market pressures, and that's what's changing. You spoke of the intelligence. Companies, organizations are intelligent to the degree that they react to their customers. For a long time, Microsoft said, well, we just don't have any customer demand. And then suddenly there was customer demand one day, and they did this. Same thing with you folks. I mean, you're to stay competitive, to create a good product, right? You're going to have to adjust open office to deliver what people want, or else people will use something else, right? Or go away, do whatever. It's a complicated type of thing. All this said, the XML that Microsoft is creating is going to exist. They will create it. It's basically just an XML dump of what they've created for the last 15 years, right? I mean, that's all it literally is. Every idea, good, bad, or indifferent, is now in XML in 4,000 glorious pages, 26. What can I say? It's not going away, but this industry changes. It's very odd when people get so focused that people somehow think, well, the way things are today are the way it's always going to be, which is so totally wrong in this. Ask people how they were using the web 15 years ago, and they'll tell you. And then you say, well, there really wasn't a web 15 years ago, right? Yesterday, there was the discussion of how WordStar was the de facto standard, right? And they blew it when they went to Windows and WordPerfect took over, and then they blew it, and then Microsoft took over. Well, so that's it. That will never repeat itself, right? We'll never see these changes. Of course we will. Hang in there. So you have to have a longer term view. 18 months, 16 months, as I said, is a long, long time. We absolutely never thought, let me say, on January 1st, 2005, that we would be here discussing anything close to what we're discussing.
And as Jonathan Schwartz, I think,
Jonathan Schwartz, CEO of a small Silicon Valley startup.
Okay.
Sun guy.
Okay.
Sun guy. Never heard of it. He said we in the IT industry only have to worry about three things that will happen to us anyway: death, taxes, and commoditization. And it will happen.
Isn't that Voltaire or somebody?
What?
Imagine I take a sample of my DNA and I get a gene sequence of my complete genome. I convert it to XML. I make a standard out of it. I could probably get ECMA to do it. But it'd be a little bit longer than 6,000 pages, but what could you do with this specification? You could only create another me. Probably not. You could probably only read this specification. It would be useful for understanding things about me, but there'd still only be one implementation of me. Because honestly, the standard's too long, too complicated, and too tied to a single implementation. And I kind of look at the XML formats like that. ODF is kind of crying out to be implemented. It's almost promiscuous in how open it is. It says, I'm using all these existing standards. I have a reasonably sized specification. You can work with this specification. The other specification, I don't really think we'll see that many other full implementations of it because it's so tied to the vendor, to the platform, and to the application. It's almost like my DNA sequence converted to XML.
If I may add something to the point, do you know how many ISO standards there are that are just language there, never used? Many, many. Standard is not a magic word. It all depends on what to do with it.
Well, folks, first of all, thank you for your patience. Now we're going to pass to the questions in the audience. Just for your information, we have about 10 minutes left. Anybody has questions? Yes, Lewis.
Well, just getting back to complacency that I'm hearing about ODF as a standard now and OpenXML as possibly a standard in anywhere from 16 to 18 months. I noticed that from my perspective, complacency is the part of the thing that we should be sharing. For example, if a government decides to use an ODF converter, they can be using it thinking that, oh, in 18 months, there will be an OpenXML standard, and then the government will be able to approve that, and we can be happy continuing to use Microsoft. So it's not so much a philosophical issue here that there might be two standards. It's rather a little bit more unpleasant and a market issue that we have to essentially counteract the rhetoric of Microsoft claiming there will be another standard that governments should be looking forward to. So I thought the dog analogy was brilliant. I'm using it myself, but it's beside the point.
One of the things we need to do is when governments make policy, they have to make sure that there are multiple implementations. So they'll only use standards where there are two or three full implementations. If it's good, please.
Questions? Michael.
Thanks. It was wonderful to hear you, Bob, talking about lock-in and people not releasing their file formats and owning their data. And I think it's great to be pretty scathing about vendors that do that. The question is IBM going to open the Lotus WordPro file format and document that, because we can't reverse engineer it?
Yeah,
no,
so you can probably.
It's more of a technical problem. It wouldn't be that easy. I mean, we'll certainly look at it. I mean, we kind of bounced it around back and forth. But I guess when we looked at it last, it just wasn't that easy to describe.
I'm not trying to be funny, but.
Was this specifically the Word profile format?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Word Pro, this was actually not one that back in the Lotus development days that we designed and created ourselves, but we got from an acquisition from a company called Salmon Corporation. It has an interesting file format, to say the least, based on the Bento container format. I know a little bit about it. It's, there are technical things that would be required to create a specification for that. Right now, the best specification of that file format is incorporated in the code. And that's probably the reason why you haven't seen one, a specification out there, as you have to, say, the 1-2-3 file format. But it may be something we can do to.
We're going to have to get clever about it, let's put it that way. It's not like, here's a piece of paper that describes, here's the 25 pages. You know, as I said, it's in the code because we never really figured anyone else would use it historically.
Yeah, I mean,
it is a historic thing.
It's a dump of internal memory structures. It's so ages and it should be happening today.
So, talk to us. We're absolutely happy to see what we can figure something out. Okay. But just internally, we'll just do it for the heck of it. Yeah. So there hasn't been an overwhelming reason to do it. But talk to us and see.
Yes, I thought there's somebody much involved in it.
Destroy it.
Yeah.
Well, that human hostess is, I'm sorry.
Hello. I had a question about ODF and standard and how we can develop new software, new functionalities in OpenOffice, for example, and include them in the standard. Because, for example, when you develop OpenOffice, the people that want, for example, to do a new chart module or things like that need new tags and new extensions to the standard. Do you have an idea how much time it can take to include those new standard or those new extension in it? And after that, if it's possible, or if we will just have a new Microsoft stuff with tags that are not included in ODF?
Right, so there's two main ways of extending ODF today. Right now you are fully able to define your own elements and attributes as long as you put them in your own namespace. So you don't put them in the ODF namespace, you can create extensions. And that's a great way to prototype and try out an idea. You know, once the community of implementers find something that says, you know, this is good, this is something that should be in the specification, then it could be submitted to the OASIS ODF TC and would go through a review and standardization process. know, that's looking at maybe a 9-month time period between a feature being proposed to the OTFTC and it being issued as an OASIS specification. But I'd say try out the new ideas, say in an openoffice.org namespace, and then, you know, once it's proven, and once we have the implementation experience around that, then propose it as an addition to the specification.
What I just wanted to add was exactly along the lines of saying, a lot of people think standards are created by, well, people sit at this big table and say, gosh, we need a new chart format, let's think of one. A lot of times they come from honest to goodness real specifications. So if you write it up, right? I mean, that's, by the way, one of the tricks with standards, right? You walk in with a spec, right? Because 80% of what you walk in will end up in the standard, real advice. But you know, do it, get other people to sign up to it, you know, try to get a little bit of a movement, if you will, other people interested in. It can happen pretty quickly, particularly in OASIS. OASIS is very flexible in doing that.
Actually, that in fact is the difference between a standard and an open standard. The standard is created in a what used to be called a smoke-filled room by a few people or companies represented there. They would sit down, close the doors, not come out until the standard was approved. An open standard is the one that permits you to come to the meeting and say, I have this idea, I've implemented it, this is what it does, please put it in. And everybody looks at it and it goes through the review process and eventually it may be rejected, but it may also be accepted. And everybody, particularly in an organization like OASIS, which is so incredibly open, everybody can come and say, please, let's do something about this particular thing, which is so needed in this time.
Yeah, and just one more word on the openness. Not only can anyone submit anything, but anyone can become a member of OASIS and a member of the TC and put forward your own ideas as well as comment on others and be part of this community review process. So it's an openness on that side as well.
You know, loaded on this thing that Charles showed today, that's just available today, as an example, right? It's a great way of getting some momentum behind it and to discuss it.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes.
We have 5 more minutes left.
I'm trying to understand this better because the statically linked documents like .dot file is file based, and this is what it was before. Basically, having multiple data types made into one file, like images and line drawings or whatever. And this is like old days, like .dot file, .dot format is that time. On the other side of the spectrum, we have linked documents like HTML, because basically we have a bunch of files, and including like style sheets for the presentation, for the view. And those are not assembled in one file, it's multiple files. So this is the web, this is for the connected documents. Somewhere in the middle should be a new type of a document format. It's not really a file-based format, but it's more kind of offline, that combines offline and online documents together. And that's fine, it probably has to be a lot of things from both sides of the spectrum. But it looks like logically, one day you will end up having like you have an application server, you will end up to having like a document server that allows you to support collaboration between different parties doing online and offline work, so you can merge the deltas on those documents when they're modified. To do that, you need to have unique IDs for each of those people who are editing those documents. So do you see the ODF can be kind of a standard for like online documentation collaboration and document server, some kind of document server can be somewhere in the picture in the future?
Just to stop with a very small answer. First of all, inside the Open Documents format specification, you have the support to several other standards such as the XFormers. There is definitely a taking into account the online capabilities of such a format. But what's more even important, and I want you to realize this, because we're thinking, we're saying, we're discussing the fact that in 5 or 10 years from now, the office suite market will be very different from what it is today. Maybe not even, it won't even exist anymore. And actually, in one of the posterior, in one of the further versions of the open nonconformity, if you look at its roadmap, we do tend to suppress the several kinds of extensions we are having. For instance, we had one .odt for the text document and one .ods for the spreadsheet application. Once you have only one extension, because we believe it is up to the application to guess, best to guess what would be best for the for the document to be read. But sure, and what do you want to ask?
The original question was kind of what could OASIS and the TC do? It may be out of place with the TC and OASIS in general, since they concentrate more on the markup standards, not runtime APIs or the server side runtime aspects of it. I think I've kind of ODF in OASIS, and then I think there's two pieces that are probably extensions that may be standardized or proposed, implemented, and standardized by another standards body, and that would be. Think of what DOM is to XML and to XHTML, standard reference API for accessing and manipulating open document files. When you think of it, no one really manipulates XML directly, or very few people. Unless you're running an XML parser, you're not dealing with the character stream of XML, you're dealing with an API like DOM or SAS. To deal with open document, I don't think everyone who wants to use open document wants to sit down and read even a 600-page specification. Now, that's great for the person who writes and implements the ODF DOM, which is a pointer phrase, but I don't think most people want to read a specification that way. So I think we'd want to see a standard eventually for an API that allows you to do something as simple as say, set sheet, set cell at this coordinates, and then set the context, something that could be easily used by an application developer so you could, for example, create a loan amortization table in a spreadsheet, with 30 lines of code, Python or something like that. And then there's the additional aspects you talk about the server side processing of code. And I think that can almost be built on that. If you have an object model for an open document file, widely implemented, available on commonly used scripting language and application development languages, you would use that then as the base that you could put your server side processing on top of.
So I think
kind of a layered stack like that.
Well, I'm just going to explain this a little bit better. ODF can be not just a file document format, it can be a communication protocol. Communication format.
To pass the data from one side of the wire to another and process it there and store it and pass it later. So it could be used for that.
There was a question, that this is the last question, according to that, you
that's right.
Hello. I well understood that you say ODF is quite different from the platform application, two different things. But what if I would, just to make it short, should say something like ODF, or it is the file format for the Open Office product, and you sometimes called ODF. What if I would use a sentence like that, file format for the Open Office, sometimes called ODF, would that be a good way to explain it?
Jordan may want to answer, but no, that would be a very bad way to put this.
And if someone on the website describes it like that?
No, that's quite wrong. You can say that OpenOffice uses the ODF format the same way as Notice 123 uses the ODF format, and the same way as Writerly writes into the ODF format if you choose so. But what you just said, it's just incorrect. It's a misstatement.
Yeah.
So two things. So one is, what would be really nice to say is, it's the default file format for OpenOffice, right? policies that we're looking at and that trying to encourage, as in Massachusetts, says that these applications have to natively, meaning inside and in a first-class way, support ODF as by the user's choice as the default prompt on that. The second thing I just wanted to make clear is that ODF now has a life of its own. It very much started within the open office environment, right? I mean, it came out from that. It has an independent life. So you guys have to live with everybody else in terms of changing the standard at this point. But it's worked so far in the ballpark.
The question is, I did read an explanation on the Microsoft website about ECMA international standardization, open XML file format, frequently asked questions, and talking about the ODF. They just say, why is Microsoft offering a new standard rather than simply supporting the file format for the OpenOffice product, sometimes called ODF? That's how they use it.
So, what is the product?
I'm shocked, absolutely shocked. Those are pretty old, but they're slanted.
Okay, folks, now we're going to close the ODF panel. I would like to thank Eduardo Kuznetsov, Bob Stewart, Robert Weir for their excellent presentation. We really appreciate your presence here, Leo.